Picture this. It's like 2 a.m. You're staring at your monitor, just completely rubbing your eyes.
Oh, yeah, we've all been there.
Right. And like 3 hours ago, you asked your AI coding agent to refactor just a simple payment gateway, and it gave you a prototype in 10 minutes.
And it probably looked brilliant at first glance.
Exactly. It looked amazing. But then, you try to actually integrate it, and you realize the agent just quietly hallucinated some defunct Stripe API from like 3 years ago.
Yep, stripped out all your custom error handling.
Completely ignored the database schema decision you made on Tuesday. I mean, welcome to the era of vibe coding drift.
It is, honestly, it's the most frustrating phenomenon in modern software engineering right now.
It really is.
We give these incredibly powerful models like a vague paragraph of English, and we watch them generate 1,000 lines of plausible-looking Python. And then we spend 3 days debugging their unspoken assumptions. We treat them like they're these omniscient senior architects.
When in reality,
When in reality, they behave much more like highly literal, incredibly fast typists who suffer from severe amnesia.
that is such a good way to put it. So today's deep dive is entirely dedicated to solving that 2 a.m. nightmare.
Right.
We're synthesizing thought leadership from GitHub, AWS, ThoughtWorks, and BCMS, and we want to explore a methodology that's fundamentally rewriting how working software practitioners actually do their jobs.
Yeah, it's called spec-driven development, or SDD.
Exactly. Okay, let's unpack this because we're looking at a core shift in the industry here. Think about how we stopped writing in binary and abstracted up to C, right? And then we abstracted up to Python. Now we are basically abstracting away from code itself. In SDD, the specification is the primary executable source of truth. And the code, it's just a regenerable build output.
Which means the actual job description of a developer is shifting.
Oh, total.
I mean, this isn't just about plugging a new extension into your IDE. It's a fundamental realignment of responsibilities. We're moving into an environment where humans own the intent and machines own the implementation.
Right. But I imagine you can't achieve that by just dumping a chaotic 50-page Google Doc into a prompt window and hitting enter, right?
No, absolutely not. The methodology only works if you put very rigid, deliberate guardrails around the agent's workflow.
Okay, so let's talk about those guardrails because preventing that drift requires changing your daily workflow. You mentioned that all the major frameworks have essentially converged on a four-phase loop.
Yeah, they have.
So how does a practitioner actually move from an idea to a finished feature without the AI just like wandering off into the weeds?
So the standard loop breaks down into four distinct phases. Specify, plan, tasks, and implement.
Okay, specify, plan, tasks, implement.
Got it. But the crucial mechanism here isn't that the AI executes all four phases in one massive swoop. The entire philosophy rests on human intervention at the seams between those phases.
The seams. Okay, let's walk through a real-world scenario. Say I need to build a new notification service. How does phase one specify actually start?
You start by defining the what and the why, completely divorced from the tech stack.
So no mentioning libraries or anything?
Right, exactly. You're writing functional requirements, user stories, and strict out-of-scope boundaries. Now, the agent might assist in formatting this, but you own the logic.
Okay.
Once that document is logged, the agent reads it and moves to phase two, which is the plan.
Write the plan.
This is where the translation happens. The AI reads your behavioral spec and proposes a technical architecture. It basically outputs a markdown file defining the data models, the API contracts, and the specific libraries it intends to use.
And this is the first major seam, right? Like before a single line of code is written, I'm sitting there reviewing a markdown file of architectural decisions.
Yeah.
So if I see the agent deciding to, I don't know, spin up a new MongoDB instance when our entire infrastructure is built on Postgres, I catch it right there.
That is the pivotal moment. Because fixing a bad architectural choice in a markdown file, it takes 30 seconds.
Yeah, you're literally just changing a word from MongoDB to Postgres.
Exactly. If you let the AI skip that seam and move straight to coding, you're untangling a database hallucination across 40 different files 3 days later.
Oh man, the worst.
So once you validate the plan, the agent moves to phase three, tasks. It decomposes that approved architecture into an atomic, sequentially ordered checklist.
Okay, a checklist.
You review the checklist to ensure the logic flows correctly, and only then do you authorize phase four, implement, where the agent executes the code, checking off tasks one by one.
It's remarkably similar to managing a hyper-fast junior developer.
Yes. That's a great analogy.
Because you wouldn't just hand a fresh grad a one-sentence JIRA ticket for a billing system and just walk away for a month, right? You'd make them write a design doc. You'd ask them to explain how they intend to break the work down into atomic commits.
Exactly. The four-phase workflow forces the AI to show its math before it touches the keyboard.
Yeah.
And that transparency is what kills vibe coding drift. Because an LLM has an encyclopedic memory of syntax, but it possesses absolutely zero institutional context about your company.
Right. It doesn't know why you chose Postgres 5 years ago.
Exactly. So the seams force the AI to expose its lack of context early, allowing the human to inject the missing constraints.
But that brings us to like a massive translation problem, because freeform English is inherently fuzzy.
Oh, very fuzzy.
Right. If I write in the specify phase, hey, make sure the user login is secure, a human engineer understands I probably mean standard OAuth.
Sure.
An LLM might interpret secure as an invitation to write a custom, heavily encrypted biometric hashing algorithm from scratch. So how do you write a spec that a literal-minded machine won't just completely misinterpret?
Well, you apply a framework created in 2009 for aerospace engineering.
Wait, really? Aerospace?
Yeah. Alistair Maven and his team at Rolls-Royce developed something called EARS, E-A-R-S, the Easy Approach to Requirement Syntax. It was originally designed to prevent engineers from writing ambiguous requirements that could, you know, cause a jet engine to fail.
Wow. And today it's the antidote for AI hallucinations.
What's fascinating here is that it happens to be the perfect tool for that. Yes.
That is a wild pivot. From jet engine failures to preventing React component hallucinations, what makes EARS so effective for an LLM?
It really comes down to how large language models process language. They are prediction engines. When you give them a fuzzy prompt, the mathematical probability of what they generate next is incredibly wide.
They have too many options.
Right. They have a massive semantic token space to pull from, which is why they get creative and invent custom authentication schemas. EARS collapses that mathematical space by forcing you to write requirements using highly constrained, event-driven patterns.
Okay, let's hear the syntax. Contrast a fuzzy prompt with an EARS requirement for me.
So the foundational EARS pattern is conditional. When this happens, the system shall do that. So instead of make sure the user login is secure, you write, when a user submits the login form, the system shall validate credentials against the existing Okta provider.
Okay, that's way more specific.
Or, you know, to handle edge cases. If the Okta API returns a 500 error, then the system shall display a fallback offline message.
It reads almost like pseudocode written in plain English. Like, the capital letters practically act as reserved keywords.
And they function exactly like reserved keywords for the model's attention mechanism. By using the word shall, you are explicitly telling the LLM that this is a non-negotiable constraint, not just a friendly suggestion.
You're narrowing that probability distribution.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because the syntax is so rigid and predictable, the AI can parse it cleanly, generate the exact business logic required, and instantly write the corresponding unit test without guessing your intent.
Okay, so assuming I write this mathematically airtight EARS document, right, and the AI generates perfect code from it, what happens to the document the next day?
That's the big question.
Because maintaining documentation is like the historical bane of software engineering. Do I just delete the spec once the code merges, or am I now maintaining two separate code bases, one in Python and one in English?
So this is where we look at the maturity spectrum of spec-driven development, which was defined by Brigitte Buckler at ThoughtWorks. She maps out three distinct levels of adoption, and it all revolves around the life cycle of that spec document.
Okay, what's level one?
The entry level is spec first.
Meaning the spec is just like scaffolding.
Correct. You write the EARS spec for the specific JIRA ticket you're working on. You use it to navigate the four-phase workflow. You generate the code, and then you just discard or ignore the spec.
Ah, okay.
It was a temporary, highly structured prompt to get the AI to behave. It doesn't live on in the repository.
Which feels very safe for teams just starting out right. But what if a bug is found a month later? If I threw away the scaffold, I'm basically back to square one.
Exactly. And that risk pushes teams to level two, which is spec-anchored.
Spec-anchored.
Here, the spec is version-controlled right alongside the source code. It becomes a living artifact. So when that bug is discovered a month later, you don't open the Python file. You open the markdown spec, you add a new EARS requirement to cover the edge case, and you ask the agent to regenerate the affected code block.
Wow. Okay, and the most extreme end of the spectrum.
Level three is spec-a-source. And this is where the paradigm completely flips. The human never touches the underlying code.
Wait, Never.
Never. The spec is the only thing the engineering team edits. The actual code files carry a header reading generated from spec, do not edit. The plain English specification is the true source code, and the programming language is just a compilation artifact.
Okay, I have to challenge that a bit. Is the spec a source actually realistic, or are we just repeating the hubris of the 1990s here?
I know exactly what you're thinking of.
Right. We tried this with UML diagrams. People thought we could just draw a bunch of boxes and lines, click generate, and fire all the programmers. And it failed miserably because visual diagrams were just too vague for compilers to understand.
The parallel to UML is spot on, actually. But the underlying technology has shifted. UML failed because a traditional compiler is dumb.
Right.
It requires absolute mathematical precision. It cannot infer intent from a drawn line. It sat at an awkward abstraction level, too rigid for humans, too vague for machines.
Yeah.
But an LLM is essentially an intelligent semantic compiler. It is actually capable of bridging the gap between a structured English ears document and machine executable syntax.
Even with an intelligent compiler, forcing an entire engineering department to literally never touch their own code sounds like a recipe for a mutiny.
Which is why Buckler strongly emphasizes that this maturity model is a spectrum matched to the cost of drift. It is not a corporate ladder you are forced to climb.
Okay, that makes more sense.
If you're building, say, an internal vacation tracking dashboard, spec first is entirely appropriate. The cost of a bug is very low.
Yeah, nobody's losing millions if PTO is logged wrong.
Right. But if you're building the transaction routing engine for a major fintech platform, the cost of the AI drifting from your intent is catastrophic. In that environment, moving towards spec as source provides the necessary audit trail. You apply the rigor proportionally to the risk.
And the industry tooling is evolving to enforce this exact methodology, right? We aren't just talking about abstract ThoughtWorks white papers. There's an entire ecosystem treating the specification as the primary asset.
Absolutely.
But I want to frame these tools not as like shiny new toys, but as hard evidence of where the daily workflow is heading. Take GitHub SpecKit, for example, which has become a massive open source standard.
Yeah, SpecKit is fascinating because it's entirely built around the concept of a constitution.
A constitution.
Yeah. It uses an immutable markdown file that sits in your repository and outlines the strict rules of your project. It doesn't matter if your underlying model is Claude, Copilot, or Gemini. The constitution hijacks the system prompt and forces the agent into the four-phase workflow we discussed.
But how does a simple markdown file actually govern a black box model like Claude?
By halting execution. The agent loop is constrained so that it literally cannot output functional code until it has generated an architectural plan that satisfies the conditions written in the Constitution.
Oh, wow.
And then you have tools like AWS Kiro, which is an agentic IDE built from the ground up for this paradigm. Kiro natively integrates ears notation.
So it forces you to write the specs properly?
Exactly. If you try to write a vague prompt, the IDE will interrupt you and demand you formalize the intent using an event-driven pattern before it even pings the model.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because it's like installing rumble strips on the highway of AI code generation. A standard chat interface is an open road where it's incredibly easy to fall asleep at the wheel and just veer into a ditch of hallucinated garbage.
It really is.
Tools like Kiro and SpecKit, they are the rumble strips that violently shake the steering wheel the second the agent tries to write code that hasn't been formally specified.
They keep you on the road. And frameworks like BMAD, Build More Architect Dreams, they take this even further into multi-agent territory.
How so?
BMAD sets up distinct AI personas.
Mm-hmm.
An architect agent, a QA agent, and a developer agent. And they don't chat with each other in freeform text. They hand off structured ears documents back and forth.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah. The developer agent isn't allowed to code until the QA agent has signed off on the architect's markdown plan.
So it's basically formalizing the bureaucracy of a real software team inside the AI's context window.
Exactly.
But okay, we need a reality check here. Because everything we've discussed sounds incredibly pristine for a greenfield project. Starting from scratch with these tools is a dream. But what happens when this highly structured methodology collides with a messy 10-year-old legacy Java monolith?
Yeah, so this is the darkest corner of the transition. The maintenance story for existing brownfield code is bleeding edge and incredibly painful right now.
I can imagine.
When you drop an AI into a sprawling monolith, it has to load an immense amount of undocumented context into its window just to understand the dependency graph.
Right, because the legacy code obviously doesn't have an ear specification. It's just a decade of duct tape and quick fixes.
And this leads to what Brigida Buckler warns is the biggest trap of spec-driven development. There is a very real danger of creating suffocating bureaucratic red tape for minor issues.
Like using a sledgehammer to crack a nut.
Precisely. If you need to fix a two-line CSS bug, like a literal typo in a hex code, forcing the agent to generate a full requirements document, an architectural plan, and a task list is just absurd.
It's like demanding architectural blueprints just to change a light bulb. It completely destroys the velocity the AI is supposed to provide in the first place.
Buckler uses a fantastic German term for this. Verschlimmbesserung.
Verschlimmbesserung. What does that mean?
It means making things significantly worse in an earnest attempt to make them better. When you force heavy upfront specs onto legacy bug fixes, you trigger massive review fatigue.
Oh, I can see exactly how that happens. If the AI generates a 12-page markdown document of user stories and acceptance criteria just to justify changing a font size, the human developer is going to stop reading the specs.
Yep.
They'll just blindly click the approve button at every seam to get to the code generation phase.
Which completely defeats the entire purpose of the methodology. The human intervention at the seams is supposed to be the failsafe. But skimming bad English is just as dangerous as skimming bad code.
Wow.
If you're blindly approving AI-generated specs without reading them, you are actually accelerating vibe coding drift. Because now the AI believes its hallucinations have been formally validated by a human.
So how does a practitioner avoid drowning in Verschlimmbesserung when they, you know, clock in tomorrow?
By remembering that the maturity spectrum is a dial, not a switch. You must apply the methodology proportionally to the complexity of the task.
A dial?
Yes. If you're ripping out and replacing an entire authentication service within a legacy app, absolutely, write the ears spec. Read every single line on the 10-page architectural plan. But if you're fixing a typo, let the agent fix the typo. You have to actively choose when to engage the heavy machinery.
Okay, pulling all of these threads together, what is the ultimate takeaway for the practitioner listening right now?
The tools we talked about, GitHub Spec Kit, AWS Kiro, BMAD, they're evidence of a shift, but the tools themselves are ephemeral. They might be obsolete by the end of the year.
Oh, they definitely will be.
But the underlying methodology of spec-driven development is the new baseline. The specification is becoming the primary valuable asset that you, the human, own and refine.
Yes.
The code itself is becoming cheap, regenerable build output. You will no longer be evaluated on your ability to memorize syntax. You'll be evaluated on your clarity of intent.
Which leads to a really profound industry question, honestly.
Well, if code generation becomes entirely commoditized and the ability to write unambiguous, structured English specifications becomes the most highly leveraged skill in software development, does the traditional boundary between a product manager and a software engineer eventually vanish?
Oh, wow.
As the friction of implementation drops to zero, are we all just moving toward becoming intent engineers?
Intent engineers. That is the exact thought to end on. As the models handle the typing, all that's left for us is the thinking. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Try writing your next major feature as a strict ears formatted specification first and see what happens to your 2 a.m. debugging sessions. Keep your intent clear, and we'll catch you next time.